For September the 1st, 2023, we talk about Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon, Baldur's Gate 3, Dave the Diver, and much more. Welcome to Level 471. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jala.
Hi, I'm here, surprising everyone, including me.
Yeah. David had to tap out at the last minute to finish preparing for Dragon Con. And Jala very graciously hopped in. So thank you.
Hi, I'm here.
Yeah.
Marty Smith ripped off their mask, and it was Jaw all wrong. All along.
All wrong.
So I need to get warmed up talking a little bit more, apparently.
Maybe a little bit. You need to do your exercises.
I do.
What's going on, Jaw?
I'm trying to find something nice to say. Let me see. I played some Baldur's Gate 3. I'll talk about that later. I went to a distillery there. I found one.
Ooh.
Okay. I went to a distillery. There was a place that I Dave and I went to Total Wine, and they had tastings going as they usually do. And then we tried this stuff from this one particular distillery here in Houston called Fox and Seeker. And it was really good. They had a gin and they had a vodka, and I liked both of those. And so I picked up the gin, and then we were just making like gin and tonics and stuff like off and on for the next like couple of weeks or whatever. And they were very rough weeks. So we burned through a lot of gin. And and then I was like, you know, where exactly in Houston is this? So I found out and I was like, oh, do they do tours? Oh, they do. Cool. So we went up there and did a tour, and we ended up loving every single thing that they have that they make. And that's interesting because there's not any other place other than the winery Messinahoff that we like everything that we've ever had, both of us, from them. So I ended up picking up some more stuff from them and have been enjoying stuff. So something that's cool and interesting about their vodka, for example, is that it's not a flavored vodka. It's plain vodka, but like they allow the grains and stuff to have their flavors come out. So it's not like tasteless. It's not a neutral vodka. Mm-hmm. So if I found out that when you put it with just like a Fever Tree club soda and you do like vodka soda, it is kind of like a cream soda. It has like this creaminess to it that I can't even, it's not 100% there like on its own, but when you put it with the cream soda, it tastes like a cream soda. It's wild.
Hmm.
So very good stuff. So if anybody has access to Fox and Seeker, I recommend their Meridian gin and their London Dry gin and their vodka, but they also have like a whiskey and an anise liqueur and I don't know, some other stuff too. Very cool.
Nice. Good to find. Good to find something reliable like that. If you liked everything that they poured for you.
Yeah. And then they had one that Dave and I were able to smell as it was basically cooking. And we were the only people other than the distiller himself that got the ability to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's a new gin that has botanicals that come from the Houston Botanic Gardens for the most part. There's like 8 out of 10 things are from the Botanic Gardens, except for like the Grains of Paradise and some other thing they have to put in there. So anyway, and we had a good whiff of that, and that's supposed to be coming out soon, and we are very excited. We're like, ooh, that's going to be good. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's up with everybody else?
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
I think one of the things I did over the weekend is I went to a salmon, like, preserve or, like, helping area. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know what the word for it is. But it's a place for where salmon come into Seattle, like the freshwater lakes, and lay eggs before they die.
Okay.
And it's kind of set up like a visitor center where you can go and watch them as they, it's like a holding tank that they have.
So you went to a salmon orgy, I believe is the word you were looking for.
Well, I guess it's like the party before the orgy maybe, but yeah, something like that.
If they're going there to lay the eggs, then actually it's like the hatchery.
Yeah.
It's the birthing tank.
I think spawning grounds is the actual term for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is like before they go into the fresh water, though. So like they have to hang out in the water for a couple days, and then they go into like South Lake Union and Lake Washington and then have lay eggs there.
Yeah.
And the other, so this is by the locks. They have like a lock system there too, where like boats go up and down and stuff.
I mean, the locks comes later with the salmon. I think they need to be smoked first.
I love puns so much. I wish I was on top of that one before you were, but I'm very happy that you pointed that one out to me. The other, entities that know about this place though are seals and, what's the other ones that look like them?
Seals and sea lions. Yeah.
So there are a bunch of those critters there too, and I think we saw one salmon get like tore open, Planet Earth style. So interesting things going on. But that was a Seattle attraction that I did not know existed before this last weekend.
Huh.
Yeah.
Neat. Nature-y.
Yeah.
Very cool. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I've started a new bedtime routine with Barrett that I am starting to come to regret already. you know, I'd be putting him down. This is probably like five or so nights ago. And you know, he was crabbing and whatever. So I said, do you want to see my game? He's like, oh, okay. And I got out my Steam Deck. And I laid down in bed with him, and I brought up Trackmania and played a couple tracks, and he watched it, and then went to bed. And now it's okay, time for bed. Okay, go get your game. And I am now required to perform to stream for my child, as it were.
Right.
He is willing to go to bed.
Huh.
And he's very particular. He knows the difference between the car game and the card game.
Okay.
Which would be Slay the Spire. And on any given night, he's very particular about which one he wants. But I'll be damned if I can understand the difference between those two words coming out of his mouth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, in truth, it's very sweet. And it's fun to lie. It does. I have to hold it at an angle that he can see, which, you know, makes my arms tired because you're like, you know, holding it up in the air. And then he feels, you know, very, very allowed to just, you know, reach up and point to the screen or poke at the screen or, generally get in the way, which means I'm trying to like see around him. Which, you know, it's all for him anyway, but, which makes my arms even more tired. So I'm like breaking a sweat, demoing Steam Deck games for my toddler before he goes to sleep.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing is the Steam Deck has saved your family.
that is what I tell Jen anyway.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it seems like watching Trackmania or any kind of fast paced game like that would be counterproductive for putting a kid to sleep.
Yeah, well, you know, the way I play, I'm crashing every other turn anyway, and so it's kind of nice and repetitive.
Okay.
Yeah, lulls him to sleep by seeing the same turn 30 times in a row as I screw it up every time. He loves the ghosts, so you can, like, turn on a ghost to chase, and then it automatically populates a ghost for your current best time. And you know, so we'll start at the starting line. You can just see your car, and then as you drive, they kind of split as your runs differ. And he always, two cars. That's like the most exciting part for him.
Nice.
Yeah, that's me.
Cool. Passed a big milestone with my patio, which is good. All of the intensive labor is done because. So we put up the fence, you know, the privacy fence for, you know, for one side of it. But I didn't want to like use a weed eater and keep on trimming at the at the at the base of that. And also because of the way things work out, like mowing around it up to the edge of the concrete pad was going to be weird. So I decided I want to put down a gravel bed and make it so it is just like one straight line from the other mulch beds, you know, right up alongside this thing and then out and around. And I dug all of this myself, not realizing exactly how much work that was going to be.
Oh, no.
Calculated the volume because I had to figure out how much gravel to get. Yeah, thank you. And by calculating that, it came out to about 1.5 cubic yards of dirt and sod that I had to lift up.
So you're prison yoked now is what I'm hearing.
Well, I didn't go to the gym on the days when I dug. And like in gravel, like 1.5 cubic yards is about 2.5 tons. Okay.
Oh my God.
So, and the dirt was wet. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then obviously had to put down like edging on it and put down fabric. And then Chris came over with all the gravel and we shoveled all of that. So all of that is done and it's nice. So thumbs up on that. I actually was out there. I grilled out there today. Which was good. Woo-hoo. Been out there reading on my hammock, which is good. Like the only stuff I need to do next, I've got like these triangular sunshade sail things to put up, which is more of a geometry problem to solve than it is a labor thing, you know, because I've got to sink a pole somewhere and pour concrete around it. But like, that's it really. And then I'm going to hang up like cafe string lights, make it all cozy. And then it's going to be done. And I hope that it's done like right in time for like those really good like fall nights out there. Yeah.
Now you do realize by saying that you believe the hard part is over, you are guaranteeing.
Oh, it's good. Yeah. I've invited myself into a nightmare realm. Yeah.
I just want to make sure we're clear on that. Yeah. Setting expectations helps us.
The hard part. Okay, I didn't say the hard part was over. Maybe I did.
The manual labor.
The problem where there is no way to think around it. It is just this dirt is here. This dirt needs to be not here. Stuff. So
what was hit hardest? Your back, your shoulders, or your hands for digging? Because I feel like I can never do shovel work without having one of those go to shit.
It was all shoulders. If I tried this before my summer of going and working at the gym, it would have taken so much longer. But the problem is, you know, my gym workouts, the way that I do them, hitting large muscles, you know, not getting a lot of stabilizers. What I ended up happening was the small muscles ended up being a little bit more achy than everything else. So
it's like, hi, I exist. And also what the fuck?
Yeah. This was not part of the deal, Ross. Yeah. So, but it wasn't terrible. You know, just a little bit of a leave and, you know, just frequent breaks, lots of water, all the smart stuff you're supposed to do. So yeah,
good stuff.
That's neat. I am really happy to have done it. Although next time, if I need to do anything like that, I will be hiring it out mostly for time more than anything. So,
but now you know.
Now I know.
I'm so glad I did it. Translated mostly as I'm so glad it's over.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Don't be sad that. Don't be sad that it's over. Be sad that it happened.
Yeah. Like, you remember when I was doing all of the...
Oh, yeah. With all of your garden bed digging stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, I've been thinking about doing a raised bed, and I'm just, like, wincing, like, no. I don't want to do that either, because, like, the raised bed is a little bit easier, but you still have to tear out all that grass and have to put everything in, like...
You got to find a place to put that grass. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've got games to talk about, and I think we should get started with that. And we have to do the regular kind of show, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, gonna start with you. What have you been playing?
Okay, so I have not prepared my usual thoughts, so this will be a little bit more off the cuff than my usual. The good news is that one of the games that I finished recently was Dishonored. I don't have much to say about that at this time, other than the fact that it remains a very good game. I will say, though, that in replaying it, everything seems to take so much less time, because like the first time that I was playing through, I was combing the area to get every last little dongle and see every little nook and cranny and like what is it that I can manipulate in every area? Where are the goodies? You know, what ways can I go in and this, that, and the other? And also I was methodically taking every single person out on the level. But like at this point, like I'm like, no, I don't have to do that. I don't have to engage with these people. I can just skip over this. And it's really empowering to just to not to be, you know, micromanaging the level, you know. So it was really fun to go back through all of that. And I will say too, like the whole rest of the game, I was on a pretty low chaos run. I was not really killing too many people, just when I really had to, because I just couldn't hit everybody with the sleep darts or whatever. And then like at the last couple of levels, I just killed every single person. Like I hold up somewhere and then like turned like used all the rewiring tools to use all the stuff to kill the people in the area, and then I just hold up with my bullets and my crossbow that I had so much ammo for and just like shot everybody that came to me and killed every single person in the level. And then I still ended up with a low chaos run at the end of things because I had played the rest of the game like a good girl. I was like, okay, I thought I was going to see the high chaos ending this time. No, I didn't. So
the old mental break playthrough.
I still have to go through the DLC for that as well before I'm finished, but and that is just as meaty. It's just as long as like the main game. I will continue to play the same game, but like the mainline quest anyway on Dishonored is a wrap. And I will tell you this very fun story. So because y'all know when you're playing Dishonored, you use the dark vision all the time. So you hear that sound clip of the whispery guy all the time. Well, Dave, since sitting there like, you know, next to me while I'm playing this game, started every time he puts on his glasses, he'll go enhanced eyes. that's a new good thing in my life now, thanks to Dishonored and hearing that dark vision sound effect forever. So that's a fun and cute story that I've got from that. I don't have anything else to say about that at this time. Y'all have any questions?
I mean, did you find yourself trying out or relying on a new power this time? You know, like a different kind of build, or was it old standbys to kind of keep your flow going?
Well, see, like the first time I played through, I kind of dabbled in a bunch of them. And so like I had played more high chaos the first time that I played. And so this time I was behaving more until the very end, because I can't behave the entire time. That's just not in my nature. Right. This time I didn't take any of the actual like possession or whatever, like, you know, like rat powers and stuff. I wasn't using any of those. It was just like the dark vision and blink, and then I did get the bend time, but I used it like once. I just stuck with blinking and the dark vision and just up my vitality and crap and just like went through the game and just had fun doing that. I didn't feel the need to push anything else up, so I didn't. So this game, of course, is one of its charms, and this is something that I definitely was reflecting on, was the fact that not only is it, you know, you can ghost it, you can non-lethal all the bosses. I like the fact that the bosses are just as squishy as everybody else. Corvo is just as squishy as everybody else. You know, really, if you get hit a few times, even if you've buffed your vitality, you will still die real quick. I like that, because if those bosses were really, really strong, that would not fit the tone of the rest of the game. you know, like the mm-hmm. world that they built up or anything like that. So like mm-hmm. for narrative reasons, I love the fact that they do that. Cause like, it definitely takes me out of a game when I'm, you know, playing super badass person. And then like I shoot somebody in the head and they don't die and they don't die and they don't die. And I'm like, come yeah. on, like you have taken me out of this. So, you know, it feels right for what this game is aiming to do. And of course, like other games have other objectives, but yeah, I was just appreciating that difference of Dishonored from a lot of other games.
Yes.
So
thanks. I'm curious, what made you want to go back and play this game in particular?
Because I'm doing content.
I got it.
I'm going to be doing an episode on both of the games coming out in November for Jolichon's Place. And then I'm going to be covering the books and the TTRPG in December.
Okay, sweet.
So I'll be just like Dishonored for the rest of the year. You can just imagine.
Are there novels, or are you talking about the comics?
There's okay. novels. I believe there's also comics. There's mm-hmm. an art book. I don't know if we're going to get to the comics or not. It depends on how accessible they are. But we definitely already have the novels and the art book, and there's the TTRPG as yeah. well.
So. The from what I recall, the comics are good.
Okay.
We covered them on Adaptation Decay at one point, at least like a run of them, like a trade paperback or so.
Yeah.
Not to give you more content to do, but just to let you know if you were looking for more, that is there, and I remember it not being a complete waste of time.
Cool. Well, like, you know, when I'm doing these like IP things, we're not talking like nitty gritty details. We're going into like broad strokes of what is this thing doing and is this part of it worth your time, that kind of thing. So, mm-hmm. you know, but right. yeah, like I also have been thinking about Dishonored anyway, because I just wanted to replay them. And then I was like, I'm going to do an episode on it. And then everybody's mm-hmm. like, do the episode. I'm like, okay. Yeah. Here we go.
So. They're really, really good games.
Yeah, they are. And it's been a long time since I played through them, so it's really a joy to go back to them. I actually, again, I wanted to do it anyway, but like having a deadline makes it actually happen. So like sometimes being a content creator is perfect. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, cool. I can make this work to my advantage. Ha-ha.
Yeah. So. No, the syndrome is progressing nicely.
Yeah, so the next thing that I played, sort of, except not really, was the Mega Man Adventure board game. I was excited about this. I picked it up, and then I texted Ben, and I'm like, Ben, a board game. I'm doing a thing.
This is one I'd never heard of, so.
Yeah, and I think like Capcom had tweeted about it or something, and I was like, I didn't know this existed. So then I ended up like picking it up, and you know, Dave and I were excited to try it, and we sat down to play it, but we had a very long day and a lot of chores and a lot of other stuff. So we sat there and we poured ourselves one of those vodka sodas I told you about to enjoy after dinner with this game, and we popped all the stuff out. All the little standees, all the little tokens and stuff are very cool. And then we opened up the rule book, and it is like the way Dave referred to it was like obtuse nonsense, because it's like you really have to sit there and like read the entire thing cover to cover to glean the information you need out, because it tells you like, here's the setup. Okay, cool. Then it says if you have like a two-player campaign, two or more player, you know, like go over to this page. So you go to that page and it doesn't tell you like fuck all about how to play the game. And looking at it, and I am just like, I can't. And I just handed it to Dave. I'm like, Dave, I can't. What is this? How are we supposed to, what do the turns look like? What is going on with this game?
The first step in the instructions was start drinking later.
Right? Right. Well, I mean, like we had barely had like a sip, but I was like, this is going to drive me to drink down the rest of this and pour another one. God, like what is up with this? So, anyway, so he stared at those instructions, and I stared at those instructions, and I, you know, I had set everything else up, and we were ready to play. He was going to play Rush, and I was going to play Roll, and we were going to go through these levels. We picked up, you know, like which of the robots we were going to fight, and, you know, got our powers. Everything was set up, and we didn't know what to do. So then the way his face looked when he was staring at it, he was so tired. I was like, okay, we'll just set this down and try another time early in the day. when we're not very tired. So
that's
clearly that's how that works.
Oh, go ahead. Clearly, you should have fought Manual Man first.
Yeah, right. So, and that basically like was sad because like okay, so the way the game is supposed to play, like you can play one player to four players, and you can play Mega Man, Proto Man, Roll, or Rush, and you go like you get special powers. Like they each have different decks with different abilities in them that you can pull from. And you have like the Robot Masters, and you can play from Mega Man 1, 2, or 3, and all the Robot Masters are in there, and you can shuffle the deck and pull 4 out, and then you have to pick which one you want to fight and which stage you want to go to, and then you like go to their stage and you know have to fight them, you know, and you can help each other, you can assist each other with some of the cards that are like buffs and stuff, and it sounds really cool. If only I could play it. So I'm going to try again when I have more energy.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a thing that exists in the world. Mega Man Adventure, a board game that I haven't yet played, but I wanted to talk about it because it looks neat, sounds neat. Yeah. I don't know if it's actually neat yet. I haven't played it.
More of a warning for folks to understand that getting this stood up is probably a night or a session in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah, like just we really just have to sit there and without anticipating actually playing the game, just look at the manual, read it cover to cover, talk about it, see if we get figure out what we're doing, or maybe go to YouTube and find a video. Somebody surely explained it, you know, and like go there. This is all to say, if you didn't think I was a card game person, I am also not a board game person, as proven by this incident. So, yeah.
You just got to find the right board game.
I just have to have somebody there to Sherpa me through it. I don't know. So, anyway, there's that. If you have any questions, I can't answer them.
Until I read the manual.
Yeah, got to go read the manual.
Yeah, so, anyway. I think I always learn games through like Let's Play videos on YouTube, and it's like so much more streamlined than trying to parse through the instructions. But
well, thanks, Ben. I would have appreciated hearing that back from you.
I was only there for the good times in our text conversation. The future was bright when we talked.
But yeah, it's fine. Well, now I know. I have learned my lesson. Don't play against Manual Man. You will lose. So. Anyway, the last thing that I've been playing is that Baldur's Gate 3 thing that everybody's talking about.
Oh, yeah, that one.
That's not real. It's just a mass hallucination.
Hallucination?
Yeah, you really should be. You really should be doing your vocal exercises, Dennis.
We didn't pre-recording banter enough, apparently.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, anyway, so... Y'all know I'm going to tell you it's a good game, but also it's a fucking horny game, guys.
Like, No, I mean, you got to be if you want it to be memes.
Yeah, and like, here's the thing. So, like, a lot of people have been complaining on the internet about it because it is horny, because there's like, you know, homophobic straight men who are just like, I was trying to be bros and then he tried to get all up on me, you know, kind of thing. And like... I guess. I mean, the thing is, everybody in this game is horny. So, like,
yeah. And the thing is, you can just say, no, thanks. No. But, and then that stops it.
So, you know, here's something that I was thinking about, and I talked about it somewhere to somebody in some server somewhere. But, like, I really feel that this game could have benefited from looking at Hakuoki, the last version of Hakuoki, like Kyoto Winds or whatever that one was called, on the Vita. Because that's an otome visual novel, so it's all romance-based, but like the actual story itself is very good, and that game allows you to turn off the romance in the like settings. You can go to the settings and turn off the romance before you start the game. So you don't have to engage with the otome element. You can just play it like a visual novel that has a really good story to it. I appreciate that because it's a hard sell for me to be like, guys, this is such a really good game, and then, you know, the guys are like, you talking about? You know, like,
wait a minute. I might have to entertain playing as a viewpoint character who is engaging in a relationship with a gender that I am not necessarily comfortable with. Engaged. Oh no.
Yeah.
What does this say about me? Oh no.
Yeah. Or they're just people who just get squeaked out by romance and video games. Like, I mean,
I get it.
I understand. So like, you know, I like the fact that they have that option, but Baldur's Gate 3 doesn't have like an option to turn off romance, which is unfortunate. Like, all it needs is a setting. It's not a required part of the game, to my understanding. So
I tried to turn them off, but they were into that.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
It's such an integral part of the game that you cannot dissociate it.
Yeah.
Which is honestly, D&D is horny, so it's like, I think it's still representative.
I know, it is. And that's part of the reason why, like, okay, here's the thing. I'm playing this game. I've played about 22 hours. So like, I'm barely scratching the surface of the beginning of this game. Like, I'm in Act 1. I have not finished Act 1 and so on. But I've gotten, I think, all of the characters I can get at this point in unlock. And one of them is a tiefling that happens to have a fire heart. And, the thing about it though, is that this tiefling, because of the fire heart, has burning skin. Don't ask me how that works, but, she's not burning, but she's burning. And so anyway, D&D. Right. And so nobody can touch her. She can't high five anybody or anything because she's on fire. So like,
she's got the rogue problem. Yeah.
Yeah. So then, you know, part of her quest is, oh, you've got to do something about the engine because it's overheating and you need to do something about this engine that is her heart. Mm-hmm. And you have to go take her to a guy who works on those things. And so he's like, yeah, and then we'll fix it. And then you can touch anybody you want. And then she's like, yeah, I can't have a brewski or high five or shake hands, I think is what she says. Shake hands. And I'm like, because that's what everybody is thinking right now. Because we know, it's obvious. It's like, oh, but I think one of your dialogue options when you're talking to her is even like, but you can't touch anybody that you want. Like, it's nonsense. It's nonsense. So
it's eye-rolling. It is interesting that so I've not played this, but based on your description, it is interesting in that instance that they didn't say like, now I can bone down.
Yeah.
Yay. Like, that's what I've been waiting for.
Yeah.
But it's like, put the focus on like, no, this is actually like a real problem. Like, there are many ways this affects my life that are not just sexy.
Yeah. Yeah, but like, still it's just like, that's not what literally anybody who's playing this game is even focusing on.
Right, you know,
if they're underlining, you can't touch her skin, you know, like, okay, why do you think that's a problem?
You know,
what do you think is going to happen when you fix her skin? Like, there, God,
no. It's like, there aren't achievements for shaking hands with everyone.
No. Mm. So anyway, it's just dumb. That part got eye-rolly for me. So that's the only complaint I really have about it. I'm having fun with it, mechanics-wise and everything. I have not played the newer editions of D&D. The last time I played D&D was like 3.5 edition, and only for a little bit of time. Most of my time was in the archaic second edition. So, like, the original Baldur's Gate games, I understand. Mm-hmm. But, like, this one has stuff that I don't ever tinker with. And, like, I've never played a warlock, for example. I don't know anything about any of their powers or anything and all of that. So, I'm rolling with a half-elf paladin. What makes me mad is that the body shapes are so limited that, like, I'm more buff than my paladin by a lot. And I'm like, there should be more body types than just everybody is like little slender person or like, you know, big beefy dude, but like, there's no beefy women.
Mm.
And I'm like, come on, y'all. Mm-hmm. So I also have a problem talking about the character creator, and I'm talking problems because like everybody's talking so much sugar. I want to talk about some realistic things that like bugged me. You know, and then I'll open it up for y'all to ask questions about like whatever you like about this. So thing about the character creator that I noticed too is that a lot of the faces You can swap different heads on the characters, but there's a certain number of heads and they're all bound by, like, are you a half-orc? Are you a human? And so on. Mm-hmm. And, like, a lot of the elves are Asian-coded. A lot of the orcs are African-American or black-coded. And right. that feels real fucking bad that they're pinning that to, like, the half orcs, like, what? Mm-hmm. you can't, what why can't I have, you know, faces that represent, you know, the different people that are playing this game for each of the different, I mean, granted, like a dragonborn, obviously you're not going to have, you know, anything human looking, but like all the other ones, come on now, like there could have been some better variety given there, because that's like you're putting some like racial subtext into your game in a way that doesn't feel good, because like you're coding certain people into stereotypes. I'm not cool with that.
and you so. Know, that is a known problem specifically with this system, you know, like, mm-hmm. and that, you know, and this, the, you know, this, not this company as in Larian, which is not an excuse to say like, oh, they're just drawing from the source material. There's voluminous criticism of like D&D's like race essentialism, you know, kind of stuff that, you know, says, hey, this is a rake, don't step on it. Lots of people have put up signs on this rake, hey, don't step on it. And then to see that they stepped on that one rake is a little bit like, come on, guys.
Yeah. But so to talk about all the rest of it, okay, let me explain that I didn't even look at any trailers of this. The only thing I knew about it was the bear fucker. That's all. That's all I knew. And so like when I roll up on this game,
welcome to 2023.
Yeah. So so when I rolled up on this game and I booted it up, I had no idea what I was in for. And so I watched the opening cinematic and I'm like, "Oh, I can see why people were excited about this. This is neat." So, you know, like it starts out with you're on a mind flayer ship and you've got little mind flayer parasite dongles being shoved into your eyeballs. It's big body horror stuff. And then like the mind flayer ship is being chased by Gith on dragons and they're warping through space and different times and whatever. I don't know, all kinds of stuff. And it's very cool until the ship crash lands on some place and you somehow survive the fall after breaking out of your little pod and breaking a couple of other people out, and you know, like now you are just trying to figure out where you are and then also make your way to Baldur's Gate, because everybody needs to go to Baldur's Gate for some reason or another, primarily because I think that's just like the biggest area where you might find somebody to help you get this mind flayer parasite out of your head. Mm-hmm. So that's the basic story setup, and you know, like hijinks ensue.
Yeah.
And so like it's got a lot of role playing options. There are parts where I feel like it sometimes breaks down and doesn't feel quite like, you know, a tabletop RPG as much. Like, say for example, there is a character that you come across that is in a jail cell, and like a lot of people really like that character that's in that jail cell, but you can't break that character out and keep them in your party or anything. But like, if you were playing a tabletop, you know, D&D game, you could petition the DM and see if you could talk them into letting you keep this character with you, mm-hmm. you know? And that's just not a thing that you can do here. And that's basically the only time that I really felt like, you know, kind of taken out of it. Like, oh, I can't really role play this because, you know, there's definitely limits, but they do give you a lot of options of what you want to say and how you want to play your character. Mm-hmm. Like when somebody is advancing on you, you can be somebody who's like, I'm going to break your legs or whatever. Like you can tell them something terrible and, you know, be completely nasty to them, or you can be into them or neutral or whatever. And like, you know, they give you a lot of different, material to work with. So, and a lot of times there is usually some kind of an option that I'm like, okay, that'll work. Sometimes I'm like, I wish there was something else that I could input other than one of these, but so it goes.
You know? Yeah. It's the limitation of the,
But it does give you quite a lot of flexibility, I think. So in that way, like it is a very good and immersive feeling. But I will tell you, everything takes forever to do. Like,
yeah, I was like, sounds like D&D to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, I'm just going to go run over there and pick up some loot from this one fallen battleground. And then that ended up between that and like just inventory.
I'm sorry, Jala. I'm sorry. Did somebody just roll a dice when Jala said, I need to go and get some loot?
It didn't sound like that.
Yeah. Okay. There are kids scampering around on the floor above me. So.
Okay. Sorry.
Tonight, rule of dice will be played by.
Sorry. It really sounded like when, you know, just when Jala said, like, oh, I'm going to go do that, like somebody rolled for the difficulty check.
Yeah.
That is the only reason that I interrupted Jala.
Oh,
I apologize.
No.
It's for the purpose of the joke.
Yeah. But yeah, so it just takes a long time. Then you get sucked up into looking into your inventory and like selling stuff to the guy and doing this, that, and the other, shuffling stuff around. And, you know, it can take a while. But
isn't the world like filled with side quests as well? Or?
Yes, there's side quests aplenty. So, like, if you're a completionist, you will be doing side quests forever and ever. I will tell you that your side quests are basically on a timer. Like, I was supposed to go save some or find out what happened to some caravan. And then I went there, like I went past there. I saw them, but I didn't engage with them. Later on, I went back there and they were all killed. And then I had to like deal with the things that attacked them and, you know, like take it from there. But like, I didn't get the option to save them because I came in near their vicinity, triggered it sort of, you know, triggered the time, you know, time lapse in that area, if you will, but didn't actually engage. And so they were already dead.
Were you fully aware that that was going to happen?
No.
Or did you come back and you're like, well, shit. See, that induces such crippling anxiety in me. I could never play a game like that. Just constantly worried that I was gating myself out of something cool, sheerly by walking too far in the wrong direction.
That's, I mean, that's a shame because, like, this is, to my understanding, one of the better, like, tactical, like, strategy kind of games, mechanically, for its battle stuff as well.
Oh, my God. And some of the stuff that I've seen just floating around the internet of what people are doing with, like, Eldritch Blast from the Warlock and some other things. And somebody, like, broke the game and, like, beat it in, what was it, 10 minutes or so, a sub 10 minutes at this point, just jumping everywhere because that breaks everything. So I'm just like, okay. Folks are wild. So, yeah. There are definitely characters that I like better than others. There are some characters that people are like, oh yeah, that character gets really good later. And I'm like, but I have to
usual
deal with
thing.
Them right now,
yeah,
you know, like the usual, but you know, there's a trade-off. So you can also co-op this game. I have not started a co-op campaign with anyone at this time. Dave was wanting to pick it up, but you know, we have very limited funds because things keep breaking at my house. That's what I was trying not to talk about earlier. But yeah, so like we have limited funding and we cannot pick up another game. But I have not played with multiple people yet because Dave wanted to be in on that when we do. Also, he's going to be playing Lies of Peace here pretty soon for Monster to Monster. So, yeah. You know, like we're kind of putting that off for now, which is fine because like if you are playing co-op with people, you have to keep playing with them co-op the entire time. It's my understanding that like if you don't do that, then they just become little AI guys in your party or whatever. And
you can't get rid of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So you can't take over someone else's role.
Don't believe so, no.
Man, that's rough. Because how many hours are they saying this game is?
I have no idea.
I mean, them saying and also what it actually is a different thing, just because they're trying to boost up those numbers. I mean, it is
80 hours in or whatever
and
then your friend has to dip for whatever reason, and that just kind of screws you over.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you get, I mean, even 10 hours in, right? Like, and someone just decides it's not for them. Can't bring in a new person to play. Like, that is so weird.
You do
authentic
have to
D&D.
Yeah. Yes. And you do have to roll a new character when you do a co-op campaign with people. Like, I was already told by somebody that I can't just use the same character that I am already using in my current game. I have to make a totally fresh one. So
that's not very D&D.
Yeah, and like also, this is so Street Fighter has it where you can make your little avatar character and you can save what that character looks like and have like a bunch of save slots where you can swap out what they look like and everything. I wish that this game had something like that, because then if you like the way a character looks, you can design every single character to look like that character if you could save what they look like, but this game doesn't have that option. So
yeah, it's a bummer.
Yeah.
Is there a way to respec like what your appearance is?
You can respec, and I believe that you can also change what they look like. I haven't done it yet, but like yeah, there is you can unlock something pretty early on that allows you to respec for a cost. So
gotcha.
Yeah. So you can just totally switch out your character to a different class or whatever else. I don't know. Again, I haven't respec'd, but Any other questions? Oh, also I hated Astarion the moment that he popped up. I absolutely hated him.
Yeah, that's the character people are most it's a meme, like, oh yeah, everybody's gotta love Astarion kind of deal. Yeah.
But I don't. I hate him. Uh-huh. And like he became more tolerable. He's okay. He's not my favorite. And like some of the characters that I thought I was gonna really like, I don't. So my favorite characters right now are Karlach and Lazelle. Lazelle is the Gith, Karlach is the Tiefling, and those are my two favorite characters. The guys suck. I'm just not interested. They suck. They're not.
Jala, cool. I have good news about you for Astarion in R and boss.
Yay! So I don't have anything else to say about that. You guys have any questions?
I mean, how are you enjoying the combat?
Combat's fun. I mean, like, cool. Of course, I also didn't have a problem with, like, the combat in Planescape Torment, which boggles everybody's minds. So, I don't know. I might have a tolerance for this kind of thing to begin with. But they mapped everything to... 'cause I'm playing on Steam Deck. I suppose I should mention this. I was concerned about how they were going to do all of the complicated inputs on a Steam Deck or, like, a controller or anything. But, like, they mapped it to your... controller very, very well, where basically you're just picking like a right button and to do your actions, and then you are using your little analog stick,
yeah,
and like toggling through different menus with that have your analog stick. And it looks like a lot right at first, but once you get the hang of like how to get to everything, then you know it's this flows pretty well and it is pretty quick to do. It's very clear about what you can and cannot do. You pick up on it pretty quick. So even if you haven't played like a D&D, the most intimidating thing for you is going to be, what the hell are all these spells and all these options and stuff? Right. But
Larian has some pretty good experience with taking a game at this scale and putting it into a console. I mean, like when we did Divinity Original Sin 2 for Watch Out for Fireballs, Gary did it on Switch and I did it on PS4 and it worked just fine.
Yeah.
Like it was actually pretty impressive in that regard. So it's not surprising to hear that this works well on the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
Control wise anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For sure. So yeah. I got nothing else.
I mostly don't have any questions because I want to play that game, and I'm going to play it like in a week or two when it comes out for the PS5.
Yay! Nice.
Cool. Is that all you had?
Yes.
Cool. I'm going to do mine because I also have a new one, though I do not have as much as people might hope that I would have about it. I'm talking about Armored Core 6, Fires of Rubicon.
Woohoo!
All right.
New FromSoft game, the first entry in the Armored Core series for about 10 years or so, roughly. You know, don't pull it against me if I'm not exactly right on that. You're playing as big robots, you're a pilot piloting big robots, and you're a mercenary who is deployed onto this planet called Rubicon that has a magical resource that everybody wants called coral. Kind of following this huge disaster that spans, you know, solar systems, where all of the coral and other places burned up. So this very cutthroat corporate economy has popped up around, coming down here and securing this. And also you are fighting against the Rubicon Liberation Front or something like that. And it is comically obvious that at some point you're going to realize or at least be given the option to say, like, oh, wait, the Liberation Front, these are the good guys, actually. I want to start doing stuff for them.
I want kind of one thing. Piece of media where it's like, wait, are we the bad guys? Oh, no, never mind. We are the good guys. Okay, we're good.
Yeah, we're good, yeah. I've only played one Armored Core game before. That was Armored Core 4 for Answer. The PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 one of the PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360 ones that released back around like 2009 or so. This feels less like that and more like a Souls/Sekiro kind of thing. People say like, oh yeah, this is a bit how Armored Core always felt. Based on my understanding, that like that can't be true because this feels so Soulsy. It does not have the Elden Ring or Dark Souls kind of structure where you're like in a space and exploring it. This is arranged in sorties, right? So like these are missions that you go on, you know, hear the briefing, you can select your loadout, and then you go into it and perform the actions for the mission, and when you're completed, you get your pay. And your expenses are deducted from that. How much ammo you used, how much damage you took that needs to be repaired, etc. And then new parts are unlocked, and so on and so on. You get more resources and more ability to customize your mech in order to meet the challenge of the challenge of all these upcoming things, right? You know, different circumstances require different designs, different weapons, different levels of armor. All of these trade-offs are in play for that. It is neat. It is a good structure. I have not gotten to like the big boss that people are talking about, kind of this game's equivalent of Elden Ring's Margit the Fell Omen. I have not gotten to Baltius, is the name of that that mech and pilot that you that people are, you know, banging their heads against. That's because I also spent a good amount of time, possibly too much, banging my head against the tutorial boss.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that from other folks that I know that are playing.
It feels very stubborn for them to put that in and make it into this big weed out kind of thing. So much so that it's like, come on, guys, you're not actually helping yourselves with this. Because like it forces you to go up against it without actually having any of the abilities to like do any kind of customization to possibly shore up for your playstyle versus what is being asked of you. The game basically has a cold open that gives you very light tutorialization where your character like arrives in this district and you've got to go around and you're looking for a downed mech whose pilot's license you can take to kind of assume an identity to take on jobs while you're on Rubicon, right? And you're going around and it's, you know, you're basically learning, okay, like here's how to use your right arm weapon, here's how to use your arm weapons and your shoulder weapons, you know, missile launchers and guns and, you know, your sword or what have you, but not really an awful lot about defense. You know, like the different abilities that you have to move, and there are lots of them, right? You know, faster, you know, like these like boosters you can use to, you know, move more quickly, kind of laterally, you know, limited flight capabilities, dashes, things like that. None of that is really explained, and the last of the wrecks that you go and investigate that has the proper ID for you to take. Inspecting it brings down this gigantic helicopter gunship attack you. And wow, this thing was incredibly difficult. And it felt very Sekiro-y because, again, you couldn't do any kind of like customization. It was just, you know, here's your mech. These are the capabilities that you have. Bang your head against this until you figure out precisely what it is asking of you to kind of get around it, right? I did. You know, it took basically all of my first session of streaming this game. It came out earlier than I thought it was and was like, oh yeah, well, I'll just stream my first impression or what have you. But yeah, it didn't even have the courtesy of having the usual FromSoft like, hey, this tutorial boss is incredibly hard and you are not expected to defeat this kind of thing? Was the Asylum Demon or the Vanguard Demon, any of those, right? I was totally expecting, oh, this thing is here to fucking wreck you, and then you have to build your own mech out of these little, the parts that are available to you from the person you're contracting with, right? I figured that was going to be the way it was. No, this is here specifically. The lesson that it is trying to teach you is to be very aggressive, doing kind of a Bloodborne thing. If you try to dodge to the side or dodge back and engage at a distance, then you're going to be punished, not only because it is firing at you directly, but it has these missiles that are firing out to the side and then will come in from the side. And when they hit you, they will stagger you.
I love, oh boy, a mech game. I can't wait to be able to engage from a distance.
Yep. No. What you have to do instead, because these are, kind of shooting outward and then coming in from your left and right, you always need to be dashing forward. And because this is a helicopter, you need to be rising upward, because that is the best way to escape the blast of any explosions, like any missiles that land, right? That is the thing that it is trying to teach you is, you need to be tenacious and always get up there so you can use your sword, which will inflict stagger on this. The problem is stagger has not been explained to you. It is basically just assuming that you recognize what a stagger meter looks like from Sekiro. and also the idea of staggering a helicopter. The metaphor doesn't necessarily work on that. Like if it was a humanoid, I would understand that. But regardless, that's what it's trying to teach you. And eventually I got it and, altered my tactics or whatever. But good Lord, how many people would hit that and then just say oh, well, this is just a fuck you hard game. And then return it without getting to the next mission, which is where you get into the Armored Core flow of going and doing these mercenary jobs, like shooting these anti-air turrets or whatever to clear, a way for another. It's kind of basic stuff and much easier. And also it gives you VR mission tutorials that explain these systems that you're going to be required to know. People kind of took exception to me saying, when I tweeted about this, saying oh no, it's no different than any other, Souls game or whatever. I would say, don't be reflexively defensive of this new game just because you really like it. And I would also say that it is different. And it didn't make a very good first impression, though I ultimately ended up, enjoying what I have played of it so far. We'll see how that feels when I get to the end of chapter one and fight Baltius. But the combat feels good. And, once you figure out how to read what's going on in the visual clutter of all of the, munitions and such, it's got a good kind of rhythm to it. Right. Hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the art style is crazy because it's so different than Elden Ring or Dark Souls, but it's, it's on its own terms and it looks really, really beautiful.
It's in the same engine too, which is ridiculous because everything is very highly detailed. It feels much more highly detailed than it is even in Elden Ring, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot more particle stuff going on. To its detriment, I do find this game a little bit pretty difficult to read. That is something eventually, one's mind is eventually able to strip all of the clutter away and see it as wireframe. It just depends on if you can put in enough time to get there,
That's a weird trade-off with the art style too, because even the menu and stuff, it's gray and very matter-of-fact font, but it's but that's a stylistic choice, even though it's not the most aesthetically pleasing.
Yeah. So, it's neat so far. It is not Souls, and it's not necessarily trying to be, at least in terms of the, putting forward things that I more associate with Souls. The combat does feel pretty similar, right down to having a stamina and cooldown kind of thing going on with it. There's no, the story is told in an entirely different way. It is not about exploring spaces. It is about using them for tactical advantage, it's pretty neat. Mechs don't entirely blow my hair back, generally. I'm not made of stone. I grew up at a time when Gundam Wing was on Toonami or whatever, watched plenty of that. That's about where I'm at with it.
How much talking is there In terms of, I feel like most Souls games, the dialogue is very sparing. But in this, like, you know, comms in your ear kind of setting, is there more banter, I guess?
Yeah, there's lots of talking. In fact, the last mission that I did had you going with this other mercenary gang, and it was just constant chatter. And their fucking drill sergeant kind of leader guy, you know, always berating you kind of stuff. The mission briefings have a lot of chatter in them too. It didn't necessarily like bother me too much, but it is a real difference compared to, you know, compared to previous ones. Or no, not previous ones. It feels very much like Armored Core 4 Answer to me. It is very different compared to the way Souls handles dialogue.
Right. Interesting. Yeah, I'm wondering if on any of those fuck you hard parts where you're going to be, you know, playing a section, you know, quite possibly hundreds of times, who knows, if that banter heaviness will come back to bite them.
I mean, probably. That was a thing, though, in Elden Ring as well. It's kind of always been there, like when an enemy has an on-death dialogue kind of thing, when they kill you, you know, I am millennia, you know, kind of thing. You're going to hear it a lot. So, this is something weird about it that I did not expect, but it is appreciated. Is there are checkpoints in missions.
Oh, hey,
that's good.
Yeah. So you don't have to play the entire mission over if you eat shit on the boss, at least as far as I saw. So good on them. And also, if you die and reload on your checkpoint, it'll restore your repair kits. So it doesn't say like, hey, fuck you, before you got to this checkpoint, you used all but one of your repair kits. It says that, you know, here's all of them. You're probably going to need them, which is a very welcome kindness.
Mm-hmm. You're getting soft in their old age.
Oh, my goodness. Any other questions about Armored Core 6 Fires of Rubicon?
No.
Okay.
Can't wait to hear you further into it.
Yeah. Something else that I played, I'm going to take the third one off of here because there really isn't too much to say about it. The second thing that I played and the final thing is kind of a surprise. I had no idea that this existed or that this creator was out there doing stuff, but I'm suddenly very curious. It is a collection of short horror games. The collection is called Unsorted Horror, like unsorted, like a, you know, like a list might be, right? Let me look up the name of this of this creator. What it is. This is available for free on Steam. It is made by a developer named Mike Klubnica. And there is a composer whose name I am missing when I look at this. It is six short games. And by short, I mean like 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes at a time. And all of them are little horror and atmosphere pieces that are almost entirely about interfacing with some kind of machine. Okay. And that makes this a little bit like almost like a Game Jam anthology or like a Dread X anthology of little miniature Iron Lungs, you know, the horror game about being in a submarine. You know, where you're navigating entirely by coordinates.
Okay, so interfacing is not like body horror interfacing,
right? I mean, there is body horror in this. There are probes being jammed into some things, but like literally, like interface is like, okay, here. So I'll give you an example. The first game that it shows you, like you are this person who is trying to escape from this apocalypse shelter. Kind of thing, because you sense that you're being lied to. What you are doing is you're in this tiny room on the outside wall, and you're operating a drill. And the entire room is dedicated to this drill, which is kind of rigged up to go around the edge of this wall. And you have to tend to this, you know, start it up on the computer and get it going, and then it'll break down, and then you have to pull the drill out and then address some kind of problem with it. So you've got to pull the drill out of the rig, put it down onto the bench, you know, secure the vise on the bench, and then take a look. Oh, the drill bit broke. So I've got to go grab the tool, and I've got to grab the tool to open up the drill bit casing, and then, you know, grab the drill bit casing and put that in, and then rig it up, put it back up. The battery is dry, so I need to take the battery off. I need to put it on the charger. You know, the coolant and the oil needs to be topped off. You may be saying, this sounds boring as shit. Cole, are you just bringing more of your dumbass simulator games? Kinda. But in this very short little game, the drill needs to go around the door two times. All right. The first time, where it's going, is, entirely without pressure. It's just like, okay, this broke down. The computer tells you need to address this. You're learning how to address each of these little problems. The second time, the security system has discovered what you are doing. Now you have 5 minutes, and now more stuff is breaking down. Okay. And the lights are going up and down, and you can hear people coming. You can hear stuff down there. Just the pressure is up immensely. Okay. And suddenly all of these little steps that you did without pressure the first time, you have to remember to do it. This, you have to remember exactly how to do it, under a time limit, as this is going on. And it is super stressful. Like, and it was this perfect dramatic moment where, you know, it was like the very, very last little bit. I had less than a minute left until the guards got here and I got shot or whatever. And then, I had done everything and I put it back up, but then I realized, oh no, I had taken the battery out and charged it, and I did everything else, but I put it back up before I put the battery in. So in a panic, I had to grab this back down, clamp it down, grab the battery, put it back in, put it back up, get the thing started again, and I just got out by the skin of my teeth. That wasn't scripted. That was just this situation that I found myself in, given the mechanics. And, you know, I, of course, run out of the shelter. You know, I think, oh, they were lying to me about keeping me in. Everything out here looks great. It's all green. There's a tree in the distance or what have you. And then you figure out what exactly they were trying to keep you safe from. Right. It's got to have that little twist there. Yeah. There's another one where you've been hired to, pull samples from these creatures that they are putting into a cage and like lowering down into the earth to like pressure treat them, to like put them under immense, you know, atmospheric pressure deep within the core of the earth in order to see like how they're changed or what have you.
Don't like that.
No. And so like, you know, you're at this job, it's 3 days, and you have to, you know, press, you know, pull the lever to, you know, to raise up this cage that has this thing that is making a bunch of noise and slamming at the edges and stuff. And then you've got to figure out exactly like what formulation you have to mix up to anesthetize it. And then you have to pull the data from it. And then over the course of the 3 days, there's more stuff that you have to do under more and more duress, you know, kind of repeat that on and on. And this is just a bunch of like scenarios that are all roughly similar to or like that, right? And it works. It works really well. The two things that I did not expect this to be, did not expect it to be funny. It's incredibly funny. And not like in a way that disrupts the tone. Everything is very tense. Everything is very bleak. But like there are scares and little things that happen that are just delivered with very good timing. Right. Like one of these, you're again, pulling samples out of this gigantic hatch that has, you know, spiders flowing out of it or whatever. It's your first day on the job. You've lied on your resume about being able to operate this crane. And the guy on the radio says, if you have any questions about how to about what you're supposed to do, take a look at the instruction manual. And you know, it's there on the desk, and you click on it and then you look at it and see like, oh, this is a future, you know, where the English isn't the first language. It is just, it's completely in Vietnamese. So it's just a wonderful little punchline. It's like, no, I am totally fucked here. Also, the music is really good. Not just in a like a very good sound design kind of deal. That's kind of expected in a horror game. I would say very good sound design is necessary in a horror game. There are really good like synthetic and electronic, just I would just call them bops, put in here. And I really wish that I could find the name of the composer who worked on this, but that's not it is not availing itself to me.
It employed like in between tense sections, or employed as like to be dissonant with tense sections?
Employed in and alongside them, in between, like kind of in like really good. It knows when it needs to just give you atmospherics to, you know, make it very clear that like something you don't want to be crawling on the outside of this control room is crawling on the outside of this control room. You know,
they can communicate that with a bop.
No, they pull the bop down and then you hear the sound. They know exactly when to deploy them. It is hard for me to quantify exactly how that works because it is used in a bunch of different ways.
Fair enough.
Yeah. The Venn diagram for Cole on this game, it sounds like.
I was really surprised. I had never heard about this. It just came out at the beginning of August. It was just, I had one night, you know, I was streaming on Saturday. I wanted it to be a one night game. So I just went on Hell on the Beat, sorted by, you know, horror games between 1 and 2 hours long. And this came up and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. It was just completely on a lark because it looks kind of cool. I didn't expect it to be like a collection of very fun Iron Lung alikes.
You should also mention it's free to play too on Steam.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it is free on Steam.
Oh, nice.
Barrier.
So if any of that sounds like cool to you, you know, again, I'm a little bit on my simulator shit with this. There's nothing you have to lose, right? Like each of these is about, you know, is less than 20 minutes as you go. They're all aesthetically very interesting and you can just pick and choose. Like they don't make you play them in order. There is just a menu at the start with a bunch of fake like PlayStation 1 boxes. You get like a little description of them and you pick and choose as you go.
I'm curious to know what this game was made in, like if it was a game engine or if you just did it in something else. Like
it's Unity.
Okay.
Yeah, everything's in Unity.
Cool.
Yeah. I'd really recommend it. It was a real pleasant surprise.
Cool.
Yeah. Any questions about Unsorted Horror?
No.
Sounds cool. Let's see. Dennis, I'm going to go to you.
Yeah, I played a banger of a game this week, which I told everyone at the end of recording last week that I had started it, but not really put enough time in to say anything about. But I've since finished it. I've played Firewatch.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Cool.
And this has been circling my backlog for so long, you know, ever since seeing trailers for it and kind of seeing how atmospheric it was going to be and loving the art style. I was like, all right, I got to get me some of that. And then just didn't for way too long, it turns out, because this game is amazing. You know, mechanically, it's a bit of a walking simulator. Like you're going around a national park or a national forest. Mm-hmm. You kind of get familiar with the hiking trails, but you know, the different story beats will point you in different directions on those trails. But thematically, my God, this game it really shines in terms of just evoking something that, I don't know, it really resonated, not necessarily because I've ever been in the kinds of situations that the characters were in, but just because it was communicated so well. You play as a person who takes the job as a Firewatch warden, not a ranger. The joke about, no, you're not actually a ranger, but you know, basically you're a person that's out there to like watch for fires.
Yeah. Just to live in a fire tower and tend to a section of the national park out in Wyoming, is where you're at.
You can't even say make sure it doesn't burn down, because if there's a fire, there's not a lot you can do about it. Just
like, you're there to report it. Yeah.
Exactly. Report that it's burning down. Yeah.
Yes. but you know, you are using that as a means of escape from some very difficult, personal life stuff. And you actually, you know, they intro you to the game with kind of a text adventure string of choices. And you make choices that that aren't superfluous. They feel pretty impactful, and they show up throughout the rest of the game, because you know, once you decide you need to get the hell out of this situation, take this job out in the middle of nowhere, your only human contact is a woman on the other side of the radio.
Yeah.
And damn, I'm blanking on her name now. You know, you call her D. Delilah, is that it?
Yeah, that makes sense.
There we go. Yeah. And this voice on your radio is your only source of direction and companionship as you kind of explore your section of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you learn more about her. There is a surprising amount that's going on in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, oh, so well, you start to get more and more paranoid about who and what and why is going on in this section of forest.
Yeah. Playing very well with the notion of what this degree of isolation will do, not just to a person, but to people, kind of engaging in, mm-hmm. you know, like the clinical term for it is like folie à deux, right? Like just the things that two people can talk each other into. Yeah.
Yeah. When you have a sounding board and only one sounding board, it by default becomes an echo chamber.
Yeah.
And that is played for excellent effect throughout. One of my favorite things about the game is very early on, you find a camera, and really they don't make reference to it again, but you can pull it out at any time mm-hmm. and take a picture. And I will never forget, because you know, like I took a picture of the place, I found it because I was like, oh, you know, I bet this is going to factor in somehow. And then you went a little bit where nothing too crazy, at least picture taking wise, showed up. And then I found something really jarring.
Mm-hmm.
And I like kind of got into like exploring that and then talking to Delilah about it. And then like the plot kind of advanced from there. And I get up the next day and I'm like, shit, I didn't take a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so I run back to the point where that happened, and mm-hmm. everything is gone.
Yeah.
And from that moment on,
you're documenting everything.
Yes, I believed every conspiracy theory about what was going on in this forest. and was so attentive to what did I need to take a picture of. And you know, that is a stressful thing because you have a limited number of snaps of this camera. It's like one of the old school click and wind cameras. But yeah, just like that tension, and the way that, you know, knowing that I could document that something was real,
mm-hmm.
Was so well played, because you start to doubt like, okay, what of this am I really experiencing?
Yeah.
You know, or what of this is reality, and what of this is in my head? And you know, one of the main ways I dealt with that was, okay, I need to take a picture of anything that feels too out there. Like if someone won't believe me about this, I need to take pictures of it.
The this comparison makes less it. Okay. I'm making this comparison not because of subject matter, mm-hmm. but specifically because of personnel, because both of these games were made by folks associated with Idle Thumbs. But it is of a piece with Gone Home, insofar as there is a certain amount of ambiguity as you're playing of exactly what kind of game or what kind of story is going on here.
Yeah. What genre am I occupying? And not knowing what kind of genre tropes you should be expecting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, if this is a love story, this thing that just happened reads completely differently mm-hmm. than if this is a horror story, and not knowing which way to go with that is so fantastic.
Yeah.
I also have to give a major shout out to the voice acting, because obviously a game where you only hear, I won't say, only hear two people speak, but where, you know, 90% of the voice work is done by two people, like they need to be mm-hmm. immaculate, and they totally are. It does the thing where, like, you know, you're choosing your responses from a list, and then they kind of say something that is in line with what you chose, but it is not verbatim with what you chose. And I can't think of a single instance where what they actually said did not feel authentic and in line with what, like, I wanted to reflect in that moment.
Right.
And generally, I can't think of a game where that's happened before. You almost always have at least one instance where it's like, okay, well, I chose this, and clearly that, you know, I think of one place in Mass Effect where you, like, you select something that's like disagree with the reporter lady who's always,
you know, you punch her.
You just straight up punch her. Yeah. So there was no punch the reporter moment. It all flowed really well.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I have some thoughts that might get into being spoilery, and I would love to share, but I also don't want to ruin anybody's experience of this game. Like,
right.
You gotta play it. It is short, and it will, man, just, it'll leave you thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's Firewatch.
Yeah. It's hard for me to ask questions or to expound more on it because it does get into, it does get into spoil stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another rare thing about the game is, you know, you pick up all these artifacts that you can read, and they are, you know, it's handwriting or it's, you know, copy, and you can hit a button to just read the text, right? To just, like, see it straight. And I never felt like I needed to resort to reading the isolated text. I always felt like it was, you got more from it in context, and it was never so illegible in context that I, you know, I couldn't read what was there. So that was very well done, to do that without me ever feeling like I needed the crutch of just the text was an accomplishment. Very cool. So the other game I have actually gone back to is Frozen Synapse 2. And I forget which one of y'all it was, but somebody mentioned Frozen Synapse.
It was David last week.
That's right. Yes. And that just put a little tick in my mind, an itch that I had to scratch. So I went back to Frozen Synapse 2, and I did something that I should have done a long time ago. I started the non-story campaign. So, Frozen Synapse 2, the big new addition from Frozen Synapse the first, was not more bells and whistles in the tactical layer. It was a whole kind of city management layer on top of the tactical layer.
Mm-hmm.
Which, hey, like, there are games where that's my jam. XCOM does that. That's my jam.
Yeah.
This macro layer was not well done. It was confusing. The visual design didn't do it any favors. It made the experience less enjoyable in so much that I gave up on the game before getting too far in it. But I forget where. Maybe I saw it in the menus, or I had heard somewhere. You can play it just the missions, and skip all of the macro level stuff. And that brings it back to the tight, really inspired experience that the Frozen Synapse games are.
Mm.
So anyone not familiar, it is a turn-based game where the turns play out in tandem. You plan 5 seconds at a time and just kind of draw little routes, and which way should you look and how fast should you move. For each of your units. And, you know, the computer is doing that for your opponents at the same time, and it plays out in a 5 second chunk. And the really cool thing is that when you're planning, you can build what you think the enemy units will do. So you can give them commands in the same way that you can give your own units commands, which doesn't mean that's what they're going to do, but it allows you to, like, war game and scenario plan.
Huge
level of depth.
Yeah.
It's all the scenarios that you could imagine. You know, you're trying to, go stop hostage takers. You're trying to find and take out a target. You're trying to assault a fortification, yada, yada, yada. All these different scenarios, and you're kind of playing them out 5 seconds at a time. And man, it is such a rush to finally get to they call it prime turn. So you can play out all these turns, war gaming, but eventually you have to say, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and lock it in for the next 5 seconds. And then seeing what actually happens and what did the enemy actually do, and watching that all play out is one of the best feelings in games.
Yeah. Like,
it is just, I said this about the first game and it's true in this one. It makes you feel like Ender freaking Wiggin.
Okay.
It just like, oh, I'm so brilliant. I saw around the corners. I knew they were going to do that. I planned perfectly for this scenario. Like, yes, I went in facing backwards, but that's because I predicted that they were going to do this and that. And you can get into some real hijinky stuff in terms of like having your units like pop up to draw attention and then duck back down while someone else comes out at the same time and fires at the distracted units, and all this timing and coordination that just, when it pays off, you cannot beat that feeling. So
what's the success rate of like predicting what they're going to do?
So fully predicting, surprisingly low.
Okay.
In terms of,
does it normally just shake out where it's like you make like four predictions and like two or three of them come true, and so you just kind of roll with that?
Exactly. So I think the way that I build it, and again, this is my approach to it, but I'll kind of build what I think is the bones of what I want to do, and then I'll draw one plan for, okay, here's what I think the enemy is most likely to do, and just play and make sure I've got something that works for that. And then I'll say, okay, assuming the enemy knew what I was going to do, how would I play as the enemy against me? And I will make that turn. And then I will go back and tweak my original route to account for those enemy actions. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's like the levels of knowledge in poker.
Exactly. What do I have? What does the other person have? What do I think they have, or what do they think I have? And then what do they think I think they have? It's exactly that. Exactly. You can actually lay that out in front of you. Usually I do one round of tweaking. If there's like, if I see two very clear ways something could diverge, I try to plan around both of those. I think of like the last mission I did, across the space of like six turns. I think almost every turn there was at least one unit that did something I didn't expect. Mm. And usually it's pretty sensical. Like, I'll set up a kill box on one door and get some guys one turn. And I think other people are going to keep on advancing on me, but they turn around and go the other direction. Or, there was one guy that I was trying to lure around a corner so that someone could get behind him. And in the actual turn, he kept on checking behind him every couple steps, almost like knowing that someone was going to come out there. So I don't know what programming went into, the AI for this game. But it is surprisingly good at surprising me, if you will.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall though, like I said, it's, I feel surprisingly accurate in like predicting the major, steps that I need to account for. I feel smart playing it, I guess, even though I'm still surprised.
Yeah.
5 seconds at a time is a point where you can usually course correct. Sometimes the turns freeze, like with bullets literally in the air, and there's just like, okay, well, I'm going to hit play and there's nothing I can do to keep this guy from dying. But more often than not, it's like, okay, I can have them duck. I can have them go behind this cover. And a lot of that is just also making sure to always give yourself outs as well. So having it laser focused back in on that tactical layer, has made this game shine again.
And I mean, yeah, no, it sounds like it's made a real 180 for you.
Yes. And just, like, I'm not even reading the text. Going back to Jala talking about just skip through the dialogue. Like I'm doing that now,
mm-hmm.
And then all of the macro layer decisions are pulled out. So it's just the dialogue between missions and then the missions.
Yeah.
And man, that's good stuff. It's a great podcast game. You can play it without any sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I've been doing in my downtime.
At first, I thought you meant like, yeah, I'm playing it right now while we're recording. You guys can't tell.
I'd rather you not.
Yeah. So when I show like, oh yes, that it's because a turn went the way that I thought.
I thought I made a good point.
Yeah. God damn it. Forgot about the shotgunner. I'm sorry. What? No. No. Yeah. It is a great game to listen to podcasts while you play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm happy that turned it around for you.
Yeah. I honestly was never sure when I was going to get back to the game, but mentioning it was enough to get it back on my playlist. Yeah, twist my arm. All right, fine.
Cool. Anything else?
No, that's the two that I've been playing.
All right. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, just a couple small ones. I did play some Friday the 13th with some friends this past week. I won't harp too much on this because this is another game that we've talked about before multiple times, but did get some people to rage quit, so that was unfortunate. But
okay.
I don't know. It's a tough. We did a great job, I feel like, playing it. But sometimes, I think if people don't get the meta of the game, it can be frustrating.
We were also playing for an audience and leaning into the fact that none of us knew what we were doing except for you.
Yeah, but like, yeah. But anyway, I had a good time, so yeah. I still like that game. One thing I noted is I think we did a news story about the, or we talked about this in the news, but all the perks are maxed out for everyone since the game's going offline. Yeah, so like all of those things are super effective for the counselors. So like there's one that where it's like it's like marathon perk where you can run for like a really long time. And if you're the runner, like person or whatever, you can basically X sprint from Jason pretty easily, and he might not be able to catch you unless he like warps or something like that. So that does change the game a little bit. So that makes it a little bit interesting. But anyway, that's all I have to say about that game. I'm going to move on from that.
Cool.
Other game that I've mainly been playing this past week is I've continued playing Dave the Diver. So I have a little bit more to talk about with that. Basically, I can start to see the comparisons people have made of it to Stardew Valley now, where slowly, like one by one, new features are opened up to you, much in the same way of like a Yakuza type game, kind of. Mm-hmm. That I'm at the point now where it's like you can there's a lot more to do now than at the beginning of the game, and there's a lot of interesting interaction going on at the same time. So to give an example, there's a place where you can race seahorses, and that in itself is a mini game you can play, but it's like very RPG heavy where all the seahorses have stats. And where you get them is when you're diving, you can just catch them with a net that you got from someone else on a side mission. And it's like, so all these different features are kind of like coming together in interesting ways. I think I've probably gone about twice the depth of what I went for my limited playthrough last week. Mm-hmm. And it is similar to Subnautica in that sense, where it's like, you know, there's different biomes based on where you go. And then, you know, things should ideally get more dangerous the deeper you go. But here it's not as like scary as like Subnautica. It's pretty lighthearted. I think the main difference here is like everything weighs a ton really deep. And so you kind of have to pick and choose what you're going to take. Yeah. I will say one thing that is quite frustrating in this game is if you die for any reason or get like, you know, your oxygen drops zero or whatever, you can only take one thing with you to the surface. And so since a dive can last like 30 minutes or so, that is very, very punishing to just, especially because when you choose the one item, it's like you're scrolling through your, you know, like possibly like hundreds of items that you picked up in that half an hour. It's like, yeah, that's all gone now.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Yeah. So that definitely can induce some stopping points when you're playing it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, end of the day, this is a lot of these features are it feels kind of mobile-y in the sense where it's like all these like tiny like mini game sorts of things. So I don't know how I feel about it. It's like, I enjoy playing it. It's very good if you want to relax, and I like that. But yeah, it's, I'm still kind of feeling it out, I guess. I don't know if this is like something that I would like shout from the mountaintops and say everyone should play it or not.
Yeah.
It probably depends on like where it goes from here and if it like sticks the landing and has like a satisfying ending. Mm-hmm. But it does feel a little like mobily, I guess, with like the repetition of the dives that you're doing.
Yeah. It sounds like what it is serving up is something where you get lost in the loop, and that might not be precisely what you're looking for.
Yeah. But there is a good amount of like dressing around it and making things unique. Basically events will happen. Like there will be like, like VIP people who come to eat at the restaurant that you need to days ahead of time prepare specific ingredients for them to try and make them a good dish. There's like events going on, like there's like a jellyfish parade going on in the town next over, so we should capture jellyfish so that we can serve that dinner that night to try and make more money.
Swoop down on the parade. Just take the participants in your net to the horror of the children.
So not like that, but there's things like that though, where it's like they give you kind of more longer term goals to go after. And they appear to be somewhat randomly generated because they can go on concurrently and you kind of have to juggle what you're doing. So it's interesting. I guess we'll see where it goes from here. I don't know if I'm the source of it taking so much time or not, right? Because I like to just kind of explore and like get max out the amount of weight that you do on every dive, so you get the most amount of things. So that could be me kind of making that happen. But I would like to be able to finish the game. So I'll keep playing at a decent pace and see what happens like a week from now. But but I would say so far definitely like a B+/A- game. I'm enjoying my time with it, and it is relaxing. So similar to Stardew Valley, if you're looking at something to like chill at night, like play in your bed or something like that, this could probably scratch that itch.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's all I got.
Cool.
Is there much in the way of like managing relationships with the various characters at these different locations?
Yeah, basically every person you talk to. All have like a single interest, and they might have an app related to whatever that interest is that you have on your phone. And you have everybody's number of the relationships you make. So typically the person is highly correlated with going to them for some sort of service. So like, for example, there is like a character who's very comically depicted as like a weeb who will make weapons for you. I don't know what that correlation is, but
he studies the blade.
So you can call him and go to him to do that. There's somebody that you know who's like studying like environmentalism and kind of like has like a conservation app where you can collect items and give it to her, and you get kind of like eco points for doing that, and there's rewards for doing that. So the short answer is, you can call any of these people at any given time, but you know if you need to or not based on if there's like a mission at the time. Mm-hmm. Most of the time it's either busy or they'll just yell at you for annoying them. So,
Cool. So Friday the 13th and Dave the Diver.
Mm-hmm. Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice folks?
Yeah, it's back to school week in the Furia House, so I'm thinking about schools. Yeah. A ton of games happen in a school setting, so what are some of your favorites?
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with David, who says, Persona 5 has to be at the top of the list for me. I even got nervous when exam time came around. Yay, escapism. Oh, man, why would you invite that feeling back into your life? Exam anxiety. Ugh.
You ever have that feeling where you're naked in front of your class? Oh, wait, no, that actually happened. No, go ahead.
Does it? I can't recall.
No, there's what's his face that's in his boxers in the dream world.
But... Yeah. Let's see, Ben, what does Peter say? But only this first, this first paragraph, because the second's a message for me.
Sure. Peter says, why you got to make this so easy? Bully is absolutely a great answer for this question. I'm definitely not going to go with it, though. My answer is a three-way tie between Persona 3 Portable, Persona 4 Golden, and Persona 5 Royale. I always enjoy replaying one of the Persona games once a year right now.
Yeah. Peter's referring to the fact that the image for the post is Bully, a game I never played.
Same. I missed it, but the art is so rock star that it's stuck in my brain.
Yeah. Yeah. So Persona is a very popular choice for this.
Well, let's have Greg shake it up then.
Yeah, let's get a real change of pace. Hey, Jala, what does Greg say?
Greg says, someone already said the Persona games, so I'll say Final Fantasy VIII, which mostly takes place in a military school. Hey, it fits.
That's my answer, is Final Fantasy VIII, or, you know, it was going to be, and I don't see a reason not to use it still. It is comically bleak. The way the school and the fact that this entire war economy runs on child soldiers is, and like that's addressed, it's, you know, brought into the story and, you know, talked about, but also that does not stop it from being comically bleak. So appreciate that. Dennis, what does Jeremy say?
They say Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe Edition because it did teach me the importance of choice in my life.
And the importance of choice is it's not important at all. It is an illusion.
No importance is an amount of importance.
Yeah. Let's see. Rizana says, personally, I had a lot of fun with Bully. You know, there wasn't a lot of urgency for me to play Bully because I have no... I've got no history or even like desire to inhabit the fantasy of being at a boarding school like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So there was that. And also it came out at a time that I wasn't playing a lot of video games.
Has it been re-released / how many times has it been re-released?
I don't believe it has. I think that maybe it got an updated re-release on the 360 because it came out so close to the end of the PS2 Xbox generation. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I wonder if it'll ever come back around.
Don't know. Let's see. Ben, what does Mikhail say?
Mikhail says, I know this doesn't answer the question directly, but it made me think about the games people had fun sneaking into school, like calculator games. My favorite was finding ways to go to the library for research, quote unquote, in high school. So me and my friend could play a MUD. MUD? Remind me, what does MUD mean?
Multi-user dungeon. So like a text-based MMO kind of thing.
Got it. Being text-based, we would change the appearance enough so that teachers, librarians thought we were word processing. Love it.
And there's a response on this that we can just add here. David says, fuck, did this not unlock something? I took computer programming all 4 years of high school. They only offered three and I was special. every time the teacher left the room or got distracted by something, the entire class started playing Bust-A-Move or Puzzle Bobble on emulator. That's a good classroom game. Yeah. The TI-83 calculator games. There needs to be like an oral history of those. I have no idea where Drug War came from, but it was the most coveted thing in the entire
spread like a virus.
Yeah.
Remember Blockman?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, the Mario clone. I was very partial to the Tetris Attack clone. That was out there. Yeah, man. And
everyone had that one teacher that knew, like, if you knocked out the batteries while the calculator was on, it would delete everything.
I mean, if you did that in class, then like a math class specifically, like our teachers would just go around and delete everything in the memory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, man, memories. Let's see. And then Jala, what does Case say?
Case says, the only recent game I've played set in a school is Persona 5, so I think that is my answer by default. Does the War Academy and Fire Emblem's three houses count? If so, that would be second on my list. And yes, P5 is recent, as in P5 Royal, which came out in 2022.
I would say Fire Emblem's Three Houses counts. That's specifically an instructor kind of thing. How do you feel about that, Jala?
Yes, it counts.
Okay, cool. So I've already given my answer.
Didn't want to say, like, what was it? Detention or White Day? Or I don't remember which one it was with the janitor the whistle. I don't remember what game that was.
Yeah, Detention is good. White Day is the one that was very frustrating with the janitor who whistled. The bad horror stealth game. No, I would not put that in my favorites.
It was a joke. A joke, I say.
Oh, man. Ben, how about you?
I think I'd say original Life is Strange, just because I felt very immersed like in that environment.
Life is Strange is a really good answer. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Nice. Jala, how about you?
So I will comment that I think it's interesting that nobody said like Pokemon Scarlet Violet or whatever. And also nobody said anything about, what was the other one? There was another one I was thinking about that I was like, why did nobody say this one? Anyway, my answer would actually be Corpse Party, because I'm not going to answer Persona 4 or anything. Too many Personas in there, damn it. So.
Corpse Party is a good answer. It is still technically a school.
It's a school. It might be a ghoul school, but it is a school nonetheless.
Ghoul school is a different game.
Yes.
And then Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm gonna follow Jala and say Danganronpa.
That's the one I was wondering if anybody else was
there. We go.
Say.
Yeah,
okay.
That's also a good one. Yeah, yeah.
Not the school I'd want to attend, but it is a great game set in school.
Yes,
it can't be my answer because like I hate and love them at the same time. So like,
it's too mixed.
It's too mixed for me to be like that one.
Well, good answers, everybody, even if most of them were Persona. If you would like to participate in these multiplayer sections, go to the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this one.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games and how we feel about them. Let us see here. I'm going to go ahead with mine because it has to do with a big release that's coming up. Somebody acquired a pre-release build of Starfield, the new Bethesda game that I am not entirely convinced exists because it seems to just exist entire. I don't need to go into it. I don't know that it's going to be good, and I don't know anybody who's actually excited about it. But Starfield was leaked. The first hour of gameplay was put up. And of course, everybody had their own reactions to it, and, you know, apparent technical shortcomings, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's a Bethesda game. It's going to attract a lot of attention. The leak is not the story to me, because that is always going to happen. The story to me is how asinine it is that the person who leaked it, whose name I'm not going to say, because, you know, it's out there if you want to find it, but also I don't see a reason to bring more negative attention to this person, has been criminally charged for it. Were taken in and processed for on charges of theft of property. Two charges. One was a felony. The other was a misdemeanor. I think that criminally charging somebody over something like this is dumb and bad. Person who did this, there's really no upside to doing it, you know, aside from getting clout. It is a dumb thing to do, to expose yourself to that kind of risk. But also, I don't know, the argument that this has any kind of like deleterious effect, like on the bottom line of a company, kind of goes to say, you know, goes toward saying like, wait a minute. So you think if people see your game ahead of time, that they're not going to want to buy it?
I mean, we did say this was a Bethesda game, so
right. You know, if it was a civil thing, like that is barely better. But the fact that the criminal justice system has been brought in, and like how
cops should not be our only verb for dealing with stuff.
Yes. So I think this is dumb. It was a dumb thing for this person to do, but it is not something that ought to land a person in either jail or prison, or get them into the criminal justice system. I think that is excessive for that to happen for video game reasons, for these ones specifically. Yeah. Is anybody here like looking forward to like, do you want to get on that Starfield heat?
I guess not anymore.
I've been eyeing it as a, you know, it's going to be available day one on Game Pass, right?
Yeah.
Which means I can stream it or play it via xCloud on the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
And so I've been hovering between like, do I start Baldur's Gate on the Steam Deck or would I start this? Like I want to have some big meaty thing that I can just work on over time. Yeah. It conflicts with like how much I don't want to have audio going on my deck usually.
Right.
So that, you know, we'll see. It is in my orbit. As it were.
Okay. Moving to the next big story here. Ben, what is Sony putting out and why?
Yeah, the why I don't think I have an answer for, but I can't remember if we talked about this on a previous episode or not. I think we did, but they're coming out with a handheld device that's like similar to the Switch but worse. Some details came out about it, but like full details have not. So it's called the PlayStation Portal. It's going to be costs at $199 upon release. It's supposed to be released sometime later this year, but the exact date hasn't been released. But the big detail that seems like a huge flaw in my mind is that it basically doesn't hold any games on its own. Like, and it needs to be on the Wi-Fi network to play whatever games are already installed on your PlayStation. So it just works as like a window into playing your PlayStation, like on a separate screen.
It's buying a Wii U gamepad for your PlayStation 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is like a huge red flag because it's like, what's the point of a portable is that you can play it anywhere. Like you don't have to play it at home. And like, granted, like you can, you know, play the Switch like in bed and stuff like that. And there's like good reasons for that. But like, I need to play this on like an airplane or something like that, where it's like I'm a captive audience somewhere. And it's like, if I can only play this in my home, that I don't understand the point of that. So
I don't use the Wii U example pejoratively, honestly, because I like the Wii U. I think that was, an underrated system. But like the use case that they supply is precisely the use case that they had for the remote play on the Wii U, which is for households where, you know, the game systems are plugged into the main TV and, you know, not everybody may want to use that TV for playing games. So having an option to, you know, play the full game on that, you know, from that system without using the TV, you know, so playing Mario alongside somebody who's watching Netflix or whatever, you know, is the case there. That and, you know, playing your PS5 anywhere around your house without being, you know, tethered to kind of the main screen, which is a cool and good and worthwhile thing to do. And I have actually talked up the virtue of doing that, or, you know, how fun that is on your phone using the Backbone controller or any number of the controller braces that you slot your phone into.
This is a solved problem.
Very, very much so. The screen on this is bigger. It's an 8-inch screen, and I believe the screen, it's probably not going to be nicer than a phone screen, actually. But it's bigger, at the very least. And it's, you know, like a split DualSense 5 controller, or DualSense controller, so there is that benefit to it as well. But $200 for this incredibly limited device is a little bit farcical.
Yeah, so and the article, they only showed pictures of it, like renders of it. They have they haven't shown like an actual like in person device yet.
Yeah,
but they But yeah, perhaps it's because I played Portal 2 so recently. This looks like a Wheatley-generated device where it's like, you just break a PlayStation 5 controller in half and put a screen in between it. It's like, here you go.
It's like we're not selling nearly as many PlayStation 5 controllers as we thought we would. How can you use the excess inventory?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the other thing is you can't use Bluetooth headphones with this. You have to use like special headphones. Like special Sony ones because of the, I don't know, some Wi-Fi optimization thing they're doing, which just feels, it really does just feel like they're out there harpooning whales with this.
What I thought of immediately is like thinking of the team who is working on this, like behind the scenes. They're like, well, we got a message down from corporate, we're gonna make this, so this is what we're working on. It's just like, oh my god.
And demoralizing is what that is. Dennis, we alluded to the story earlier, what is going on with Asterion in Baldur's Gate 3?
Yeah, so Jolly, you wanted to see less of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turns out that might be a tactically sound decision. So, you know, all these side characters or characters in your cast have personal quests, story arcs that are dedicated to just them and what's going on in their lives. And without spoiling anything, Asterions can go very sideways when you do it, because bad things happen to Asterion on that quest. So the way around that is, don't bring Asterion. You can literally just opt out of having him in your party for the final part of his quest line, and the game accommodates that.
Dude.
And so, yeah, you can just, you know, take him out of your party, finish the quest.
Mm-hmm.
You can even, there's some trickery you can do from like unchaining him from your group, leaving him in a corner somewhere, and then walking him into the combat after the cinematic has triggered. So you can really have your cake and eat it too if you want his tactical benefits without his story presence.
And I
just think this is hilarious. Man, I want to say that they accommodated this, or they made something so expansive and flexible that they could not think of this and it still kind of works. I don't know which. But they, you know, the article implies that there's like cutscene stuff that will still go off if he's not there.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to have planned for it in some aspect.
Whenever there's doubt about that, you always have to look and see what do they decide to patch out. You know, yeah. And this is a game that's been patched a couple of times. If they absolutely did not want this to happen, they would have taken away the ability to do it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so more shade to throw at Asterion, but also, you know, more light to throw at Larian, just for them kind of thinking around corners and anticipating ways the players might want to get creative.
Yeah.
And accommodating that.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Angela, how about you?
Nothing.
Atta girl. How do you feel about buttoning up?
Buttons.
Mm-hmm.
The credit. I just want to say one thing. I like the juxtaposition of Larian, like, supporting gamers having fun, and Bethesda jailing people for playing their games.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no. I am way more down with one of those philosophically. Yeah.
You can't write that shit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 471. We really appreciate you taking the time. You know the things that you can do to support us. You can leave a rating or review wherever you listen to this. That is always appreciated, and it does make a difference for us. You can support the network on Patreon, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Tell your friends, and most of all, come back next week. Well, no, not next week specifically, because we are taking it off for Labor Day purposes. So if you're in America, enjoy your day off, and think about and express solidarity with folks who are on having some labor and doing some labor struggles right now.
Mm-hmm. The reason this stands out as a long weekend Is because of the labor. Because of the labor movement.
The reason we have weekends is because people fought and died, literal wars on U.S. soil, for the things that we take for granted right now. So keep that in mind while you're enjoying yourself. It doesn't need to be a somber affair, but you know, do keep it in mind. Jala, what's happening in Jala's place?
Yeah, so the day that this episode comes out, also on my show, you get to hear Ben and Dennis and I, and also Matt from Fun and Games podcast, talking about Portal. So yay, lots and lots of Portal talk. So over 3 hours worth. Yay. It is a wonderful.
You can find out if we like the game.
No, it was a very fun time, and everybody brought interesting points, I think. So definitely check that out. As for topics, the last topical episode that I did was on unraveling grind culture, which is appropriate for Labor Day weekend.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, no, I've seen you posting about the grind, you know, just the grind sets. Critical books you have been reading, or specifically like burnout shit.
That's because I'll be doing an episode on burnout as well next year.
Yes. Cool. Is there anything I am forgetting? All right. Well, I've been Cole Ross. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can follow my Slay by Comment series on Reddit.
I'm Jalachan in all the places, including Blue Sky and Jalachan.place, where you can find my podcast that is solo.
Oh, someone blew you, Jala? Damn.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what?
Blue Sky.
No, I didn't get it.
That's, and Arrested Development.
Oh, yes. There we go.
I'm not, I haven't, it was I'm not a reach. On Blue it was Sky reach. Yet. Yeah. I don't know the terminology on the new social media sites. Everyone's just... Blue. Anyway, I'm Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
Right as the punchiness kicks in.
I've got one, Enhanced Eyes.
Yeah.
What's that from?
It's what Dave says.
Oh, yeah. Right. Although I will say that I absolutely, the moment I posted that, got well actually'd and was like, no, it actually is like some other nonsense garble that this guy is saying. It's like, no, it sounds like he's saying Enhanced Eyes. Dave's like, yeah, so Enhanced Eyes.
Yeah, that's what Dave says. Come on.
That's his version.
And Dave, we trust.
So, yeah, I have two. I have Manual Man, and then I have a very long one. I tried to turn them off, but they were into that.
Okay. Ben, what you got?
I have two from the beginning. I have Hi, I Exist, and What the Fuck? And then okay. I also have another one. Don't be sad that it's over. Be sad that it happened.
Yeah. I've got that one as well. Another long one. Long titles this week. I also had Manual Man.
Okay.
And then the final one I had is Deploy the Bops.
I tried to turn them off, but they were into that.
I do too.
I'm into
too.
That one as well. It's
pretty good.
Yeah, that one got laughs. So any arguments against?
No, that was a good one.
We operate in a laughtocracy.
I mean, usually, yeah. that's my best indicator, even more than votes, really. Mm-hmm. Well, it is decided.
Excellent.